Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And today, events in Central Iowa includes people from all over the country. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, here today with Greta Anderson, and we're your hosts for today.
Morning, Ursula.
And we also have a whole bunch of people with us here who are very special. They are community radio people who have come for the Grassroots Radio Conference. They've arrived yesterday for this conference, and they all have really great stories to tell. And we're going to ask them to share some of their stories, to share with you what a great family community radio is. The Grassroots Radio Conference is happening today and tomorrow and Sunday morning. And our conference center is at the Octagon Center for the Arts and KHOI building. And you are invited to come and check out the conferences and the workshops. And we will have a keynote speaker tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. David Barsamian from Alternative Radio will be speaking. So please stop on by and find out what KHOI is all about through association with all these other great people that are doing community radio in other parts of the country. So let's get started. We have a whole bunch of people in the studio. We just want to hear their stories. Adrian, let's start with you.
Thanks, Ursula.
This is Adrian Lauby, and Adrian has come from San Francisco.
Yep, I live in Northern California, and I'm on KPFA, Berkeley, out of Berkeley. I do a radio program about disability, which I've done for about 10 years. And I came because I just can't resist seeing women using technical equipment. It just draws me wherever it is.
Well, Adrian, how did you get into community radio?
Well, I had been sick. I'm disabled with asthma, and I spent about 10 years in my bedroom, not able to do anything in the evenings, staying up all night with asthma. And I'd listen to my local community radio station, and I learned all the DJs and all the hosts and all everything they wanted to say. It was, as so many people have said, it's a university of the air. And when I got a drug that made me feel better, the station was having some problems. So I hopped onto a committee. And I guess the rest is history.
So how long have you been involved with community radio?
It's been about 12 years now. After a while, I said, you know, we need to have more programming about disability. It's the one thing missing. And I thought, well, I'll just say that, and I'll get a few of my disabled friends to say that, and then, you know, the station will start doing it. And then they said, you know what? You're going to have to do this if you want this done. And so we trained ourselves, and we happened to be at a particular moment where they were putting on some new programs, and we got on the air.
So, Adrian, you're going to actually be doing a workshop today or tomorrow, I can't remember which, about disability programming or programming about disability issues.
Yes.
And can you give just a little bit of an explanation of what kind of programs you do and why programming like that's important for radio shows?
Disability is the forgotten resource for the progressive community. There's so much going on in the disability rights community and in the disability justice community, and basically nobody knows about it. So everybody knows someone who's disabled, but most of the time we're considered a medical problem. And what I've found and what I've realized in my own life is there's tremendous knowledge, and it's starting because there have been disability studies. Right now, disability justice is really hot. And part of it is that people are aging in the academic community, and they're looking around for, we need to have an activism that works. And that means how to take care of ourselves and how to take care of other people. And wow, for 20 years, the disability scholars have been working on this, how to be an activist and how to do it right in a way that is sustainable, essentially. So it's hot in academia. I myself have been...
Can you give an example of what you mean?
Well, you know how activism really is sort of practiced in the left. It's like, get up in the morning, work, 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 go to bed at night exhausted, and and really wiped out and kind of not liking all the people that you're around and having a lot of fights. So in the disability community, we can't do that. And some of us get up in the morning and we have morning routines that take us till noon. So you have to learn how to work smarter, but also in a much more, like, looking at the person around you and saying, this is a real whole human being. What do they need? So that's often perceived like, what's access? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're going to have, like, our collective is all people with disabilities, well, we're not going to have a meeting at 9 o'clock in the morning. And still we have to get the work done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very individualized, really, when you get right down to it. It's like, well, that's what human relations really are. What do you need? What do I need? How can we get from A to B?
Can you describe a particular instance where you feel like your show really kind of hit the mark or had an impact?
Well, I'm doing a lot of programming with mental disabilities right now, which I could speak for many, many weeks, but I interviewed a woman who had a very, very severe mental illness, had been in and out of institutions her whole life, or maybe her whole adult life. And she had a great story to tell. It was really interesting. And afterwards, she called me, and she said, I got a phone call from my father. He said he never understood me. And she started to cry.
Hmm.
And that's sort of like, well, do I need to do anything else before I die? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We'll stick around, and we'll probably come around back to you. But let's move on to one of our other guests. Bear, do you want to talk for a minute about where you're from and what you're doing?
Well, it's going to sound like we're a little bit Northern California heavy, but I'm a little bit further north from where Adrian is. I'm from from KMUD, which is in Redway, California, 200 miles north of San Francisco.
And Redway is up where the redwood trees are.
Where the last of the standing redwood trees are, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The coastal redwoods.
That's right.
Which are the tallest redwoods. That's what I learned last time I was in Northern
California. Well, good. Every time you come to California, I learn something new. They're really tall. They really are tall.
Bear, what are you doing in community radio?
Well, I've been KMUD is a pretty old station, and not as old as KPFA, but we celebrated our 27th birthday this year, and which, you know, it's like a miracle of community radio, how we just keep surviving and keep being able to raise money. And so I've worn many different hats. I've been involved there for probably about 25, 26 years. Presently, I...
How did you actually get involved?
Oh, go way, 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 way back. I got involved because of knowing people who were political prisoners in the 80s and 90s and wanting to talk about their stories. And I think the very first time I got on the radio, I had just read Assata Shakur's autobiography. And she, for people who don't know who she is, she was a Black Panther in the 1970s. She was one of the founders of the Black Liberation Army it's kind of horrific to me how timely all of this is, given what's going on in St. Louis today with the murder of Michael. But... I got on the radio and started talking about her book, and then from that, then I went on to talking about women political prisoners that I knew, and we were, you know, working to free them. And then I got involved in women's programming, and then I got involved in jazz programming, and then I got very involved in different committees. You know, and at present, I'm still doing a jazz program, and I'm really most involved, I'd say, with helping organize KMUD's pledge drives and coordinating volunteers as a volunteer to help raise money to keep the station going. And then the other thing that I think is super important that KMUD does that I'm more peripherally involved with, but I've gone to, you know, at least a dozen trainings probably, is how we respond to emergencies, which in California you can have any number of them. They're from fires to hurricanes to droughts to, well, not hurricanes, but major storms. And
you're having fires right now in California.
And we're having fires right now. Which,
how bad is it?
It's bad. It's very scary. I mean, right now there is a fire burning in the K-Mud listening area. We have a pretty big area. We go, from northern Mendocino County, probably all the way up into southern Del Norte County, because we have three different signals. Thank you to all of the K-Mud people that made that happen. And so in our northern Mendocino, south of where the station is, there's a fire burning that's burnt over 10,000 acres, a lightning storm. It was threatening. Last week when I left, there had been a number of evacuations. Several K-Mud volunteers were having to evacuate where they live. So it was hitting really close to home in terms of our community. Like, whoa, we actually know people whose homes are threatened. This is
Are you worried about your home?
Well, I always worry about my home when I leave home. Yeah, I built my home in 1990, and for about a year, every time I drove away and came home, I would be so relieved that it was still there. And it was like this completely irrational thing. I wasn't worried that it was going to burn down. I was more worried that it was just going to disappear while I wasn't there to make it.
So. It has to be said that Bear built the house herself, and you have your own water and electrical supply.
Right. I live off the grid, and I have my own water, which, at this point, I'm more, it's very scary how little water there is. I have a spring that was putting out about 3 gallons every hour when I measured it last week. It's probably half of that now. But we put in a lot of tanks for this very reason, so we had about, at the beginning of the season, we probably had about 40,000 gallons of tanks for gardening and stuff like that.
So K-Mud, the radio station, it serves people in terms of dealing with the fires?
K-Mud, I think this is the most important service that K-Mud gives to the community. I mean, we do, great, music programs and fascinating talk shows, but when there's a crisis in the community, I mean, my hat off to our news director and to the volunteers that come in and help keep the community informed. And last week, the day after the evacuations happened, our news director was in there on Saturday putting together a special half an hour program where she was interviewing people who had pre-recorded, but she interviewed people who had to evacuate their homes the night before. She interviewed, people from CAL FIRE, the agencies. She interviewed the sheriff of Mendocino County, who I have to say gave the best pitch I'd heard in a while for community radio. He said, when fires break out, I tell everyone, turn off your satellite radio and turn on your community radio, because they are going to tell you what's going on. And he, recognized KZYX in Mendocino County and KMUD for the awesome service and work that they were providing. And mostly just keep people informed so they're not panicking.
And, in fact, during this conference this weekend, the Story County Emergency Service people are going to come and talk in one of our workshops about dealing with tornadoes.
Right, dealing with tornadoes and how community radio can have it together to respond to the needs of the community.
Yeah.
At K-Mud, we've worked out a pretty intricate system for a really big emergency. A lightning fire burning in one place, that's something that one or two people can handle getting. Our news department can take care of that. Mm-hmm. But when we've had, 100 or 200 lightning strikes in a big storm. And that's my big fear for this summer. This summer cannot end soon enough for me. Because if we get a strike like that, then all the resources are spread really thin. Mm-hmm. And that's when everyone just pulls out their shovels and their water packs and go and deal and hope that someone that, really has more experience and skills show up soon.
Show up soon. Well, it also has to be said that, Bear, your station has had a grassroots radio conference in the recent past.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were one of the organizers. So you've been here helping me and the rest of the crew at KHOI pull off this conference.
For just a couple of days.
So just
the last second.
give us a story about what this conference means.
Oh, I have to say, the Grassroots Radio Conference to me is it's like a shot in the arm. When, working in your communities, and working at your station, sometimes it can get really draining. And sometimes you can lose sight of just what a huge picture it is in terms of community radio and, nationally and internationally. And when I come to a conference like the GRC and meet people from all over the world who are doing it, and in this conference, even more excitedly, trying to get on air. And that, I mean, people say, radio, what's the future of radio? And I go, my God, you come to a conference like this, and hundreds and hundreds of low-power FM stations are really working to get on because they get the importance of really local, really, really local community voices having access to the airwaves, not having the only station in your town be a computer, broadcasting something that Clear Channel puts on from God knows where. So, the stories of what happens in communities when, there's an emergency and the first thing they're told is call your local community radio station to get the information, and the local community radio station is just a computer playing music from the 1960s, that's when you really get the importance. And it's clear that there's a huge need for local community voices, and this conference is all about that.
Yeah, and it's about one other thing, too, which is really about great friendships. The friendships that are developed at these conferences are really lifetime friendships, and Bear has been my friend since about 2000.
I interviewed you on the radio.
That's right. in California. And, we've really been walking side by side since then. Not always physically, but this is a community that exists virtually in everybody's minds, and we all carry each other in our minds as we do our work in our local communities. And, your friendship with me has really embodied that spirit of just incredible generosity and ambition to think on a very high plane. So that's a big part of this conference too. Are the great friendships that develop and the open heartedness.
Thank you. That's absolutely true. And also making meeting people face to face. That I was saying to Ursula today, that on the way over here, it's just amazing to me how many brilliant people there are at this conference. People who are starting up stations that I was talking to last night, who just know so much about what they're doing, and they've never done it before. It's people who've been doing it for like 40 years, and all coming together to share with each other.
And we're going to talk to some people who are starting up some new stations. We have Sam Brannon from Texas, right?
That's correct. Howdy, y'all.
and we have the Reverend Joan Ross from Detroit starting up a new station.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here. And so those are some newbies. We've been talking to veterans. They'll be coming in a bit. You're listening to KHOI Community Radio. We are hosting the GRC Grassroots Radio Conference, which means we have people from all across the country here in our studio who are going to talk to us about their radio station. And one thing that often happens when I talk to people in the community about the work I'm doing at KHOI, they say, oh, so you're a public radio station. And this is one of the biggest kind of things that we need to educate the public about, is the difference between public radio and community radio. And with us is Marika Partridge. You work in Washington, D.C., and in a community radio station. You've also worked in public radio. So maybe you could do that piece for us.
I'll try, Greta. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. I got into radio
in the early, well, actually in the 1970s in Juneau, Alaska. I had arrived there just out of college, and I turned on the radio, which I was a addicted radio listener all my life, actually. Turned it on, and I heard someone, there was only one thing on the dial in Juneau, Alaska, on the FM dial, one station, and it was KTOO, the fairly new public radio station, NPR station, but it's also a community station. And in Alaska, they really exist together. And so I heard a voice say, if you want to volunteer at the station, come on down. And the phone had just been installed in the house I was living in, and I called and I said, I just heard your ad. I want to come down. And that was not an ad. Public service announcement. okay, whatever. So I started in radio then. I had just gotten my first job as a cartographer for the Forest Service, and I pretty quickly quit that job and became the music director of the program of KTOO in Juneau. And so I, came in without any radio experience, without any journalism background, actually, and started because I have a music background. I ended up going down to Sitka and starting another station like the one in Juneau, also community public station, because up there we needed NPR. That station that I started in Sitka, KCAW, is about 34 years old now. It's really thriving. It's a great model. They're streaming online now, and That's my preferred listening in Washington, D.C. I moved from Sitka to D.C. to work at NPR. So I really got into the corporate headquarters there and stayed there for about 16 years. In the end, as an engineer, a nice women engineers, we love them very much. I was a news writer, and I directed All Things Considered. I was really in the thick of the corporate radio thing. I didn't have time for any NFCB, or I didn't even realize that the grassroots radio had started, But I ultimately became disenchanted with my job. I loved it for a lot of reasons, but I didn't really like the direction that the programming was taking. So I quit. I became a freelancer and a homeschooling mom, and in that openness, I heard about the low power FM opportunity. And radio means so much to me, and the radio in DC is just fully corporate, really. There just isn't a way to get on. You can't get your foot in the door. Even someone with experience, there's no radio show for me. And you don't hear kids on the radio. You're not hearing the stories of our local town because NPR really, really dominates the scene in D.C. So it's actually, I consider it quite subversive to be starting low-power FM on the edge of D.C. We're not that welcome. NPR's fought against us. The NPR stations don't want us, even if we take 5 listeners from them. They really don't. I can't take my summer interns touring at our local public radio stations because we're considered really an annoyance, and we pose a threat even to our wonderful Pacifica station because they're struggling for every listener they can get. So it's kind of a tough landscape out there in the metropolitan areas. This opportunity right now that we're having for, and I'm in a wannabe state, I'm waiting for the FCC to give us permission to go ahead. We're in a we're in a group of kind of 3 serious ones right now. There are 5 of us actually all together. And the FCC's got to sort it out.
5 stations?
5 wannabe groups. 5 wannabe groups for 1 frequency.
Oh.
Because I don't know if people know the sort of story of this, but there have been giveaways, and I'm catching up on the whole history, but there have been giveaways of the low-power FM waves before, but not in metropolitan areas. So with the Community Radio Act of 2010, this is the first time that cities like Chicago and D.C. and L.A. have had a chance to get in there because they've made it possible to get into smaller spaces on the dial. Like you got your 88.1, 88.3, 88.5. We're allowed to insert ourselves a little closer as a result of that legislation. So, yeah, we're waiting. We're very hopeful. We're building community.
Okay. Thanks for that story. And you mentioned that at a certain point you saw the direction that National Public Radio was going, and I wondered if you could expand on that a little bit.
Well, I'd say it takes 2 forms. One is as the director, I was.
You were the director of all things considered.
Considered. Yeah. So the clock and the format of the program I was incredibly familiar with. I knew like every break and everything. So we would format breaks sometimes. You'd tell the stations, we're going to have a half an hour documentary. We're going to go right through that place. Because a lot of people are automated now, but they don't want you to go through that little 19 after spot where they cut in and stuff. So that began to be, I could see that push-pull, you couldn't put the kind of programming on because there's a lot of automation and there was a lot of rightful dependence on access into the show. But that started to, now I'll tell you that the longest, and I don't know the clock by heart now, but it's about 8 minutes is like, I mean, maybe 12 is the absolute top. So
a local station can get?
No, that NPR put like the longest, like, story that you can get, that you can hear. I mean, I think we have really good attention spans.
Yes.
We don't need everything like put into 8 minute segments. And the last piece that I had on NPR, the editor, it was a kind of a fun piece about a return of youth to contra dancing and folk dancing. And I had quite a bit of good tape with kids who were getting out there, and it's happening all around the country. But the editor really wanted, there wasn't a piece of tape in that piece, and the piece should have been probably 5 minutes long, if not eight, and it came in at like three. And there, you know, this convention now of people finishing the sentences of the tape that they've gone out and gotten an interview, and then they don't really let the interviewee say everything. You come in and you cut in. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
This cutting in thing. So I fell for the editor's desire to have this, like, pacey, as she called it, pacey edit. And I actually cried when I heard my piece on the air. I was so disappointed with this pacey version of a beautiful story. So that's another thing. So but the main reason that I left NPR is I have a high-functioning autistic son. At the time, he was about 12. And I suggested that we follow a newly diagnosed autistic kid through the diagnosis process and the advice process, because we were quite confused about which advice to take and who's going to pay for it and what was going to help. And our executive producer said, it's not a story.
Wow.
I know, thanks. Wow. I know. I was pretty surprised. I felt my heart just sink. I'm like, I just can't do this music pieces anymore. I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to go home. So that disappointed me. I mean, in fact, Newsweek magazine took the lead on the autism story back there in the you know, late 90s, year 2000.
We had Adrian Lalby on earlier talking about disability radio and the wonderful resource that people with disabilities are. And maybe we should take a musical break now. We'll come back and talk to some people who are working to get radio stations started locally, I guess, as you are too, Marika.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host this morning, Greta Anderson, and we are having a special GRC edition of Local Talk. GRC means Grassroots Radio Conference, and KHOI is hosting the National Grassroots Radio Conference this very weekend and have so many wonderful guests to share with you, our listeners in Central Iowa. We've talked to a lot of community radio veterans this morning, and now we're going to turn it over to some people who are just starting stations in their communities, in their neighborhoods, and bringing peace and all kinds of other good things, hoping to bring some wonderful things to their neighborhood and everything that community radio has. So I'll turn it over to Sam Brannon. You're from San Marcos,
That's Texas. Correct, San Marcos, Texas Radio.
Okay, and are you on the air yet?
No, we're working real, real hard. We got our construction permit in January, and we've begun our planning, and we've got a couple of bumps we need to get through, but we're really excited. We've got 70 people in the community that have volunteered and put time into this project so far,
wow.
And we are just so excited about it.
And you've heard some folks, a lot of folks talking about the things that community radio brings to their neck of the woods. Has that spurred any thoughts in your mind about, you know, why you're here and why you're doing this?
Yeah, it's funny. The list is really long on why we're doing this. But basically, I think it's, you know, we want to create a community hub in San Marcos. We've got a lot going on down there and, you know, local issues that are going to affect everybody. And we just really want a forum to get those issues out there and have them discussed and inform the community and play some great music and create some great relationships and let people get to know each other in a way that we, you know, it's kind of hard to do. Even in a town of 50,000 that's not that big, we want to be that hub where people come to and get everything they need to know.
All right. What are some of the issues you're facing down there?
Well,
this is south of Austin?
Just south of Austin. And San Marcos, Texas is, you know, if you listen to our local politicos and the PR and the marketing, we're one of the fastest growing cities in the United States. And that has to do with being just outside of Austin. What we want to do is just not become another bedroom community for a big city. We've got a great culture in that town. You know, we've, like, years ago, we had some pirate radio there, and to hear the stories, that was before I got there, but to hear the stories of what that did for that community and the enthusiasm is still there. You know, we're trying to manage that growth in a way that everybody's comfortable with, you know, city, county, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's like every other community. We've got a lot of issues that we care about and that we don't really feel that the community's informed enough about. So, we want to use this as a forum just to bring people together and have an understanding and start solving some problems.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we also we'll come back to you. Please jump in if there's something that trips your trigger there. We also have Reverend Joan Ross of Detroit.
Good morning, Greta. Good morning.
Good morning. And you're starting a radio station, too, at
right.
the beginning stages.
Yes, we got our CP license in May, so we're very, very new to the process. But unlike Sam, we are in an occupied city right now. I don't know if you know that Detroit is under emergency manager, so we do have a lot of issues that people need to know about. But more importantly, we need to give voice and power back to communities so that they have a say. They have the information that's not always told to them by mainstream media. So it's important to us to have community radio and to have that voice in community again. We've got about 30 organizations that have come together now to support us in community radio. We're a population of about 700,000 people, certainly down from the 2 million that we were in the heydays of Detroit. But there's so many issues. We have water shutoffs. People are without water. They have turned off our street lights. We have to find ways to create lighting in our streets for ourselves. We have buses that have been totally eliminated from the schedule. We're down to no Sunday service, no service after 9 o'clock, no service between 9 and 2 in the afternoon. So we have many, many, many issues that we need to be informed and to let our community know how we're handling these issues.
When you say no service except between 9 and 2, that's mm-hmm. bus service?
Yeah, no bus service. So if you have a doctor's appointment at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or noon, you have to go early in the morning and wait for your appointment, or you have to make that appointment after 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. This is a major city.
Right. Electricity sounds like it's next.
Yeah, electricity probably is next. We have no street lights. Detroit has about 86,000 street lights, and currently only 50,000 of those lights are being maintained and operated by the city. The rest of them are dark. Their plan is to downsize and shrink the city. So we have created a program in our area to install solar-powered lights of our own that we own. If we put them on the street side, then they belong to the city. So we have to engage residents to allow us to put the lights in their yard, so we own them. And these are all off-grid lights. We've been working with solar. We've done on-grid and off-grid projects, and currently the lighting project, we're waiting to install 10 more lights, probably the end of this month, to create community light. At 4 o'clock in the evening, it's dark in Detroit. 4 o'clock in the morning, it's dark. So if you had to go to the bus stop or your kid going out to school, you're going out in the dark in Detroit.
And when you speak of we, this is the community coalition of 30 groups that...
Well, North End Woodward Community Coalition, my organization is the one that applied for the license, and we have now brought together other community groups. We want this to really be community radio, so any organization in the city, and we have 400 listed 501c3s in Detroit, any of those organizations can come and be a part of the radio, be a part of the stationing and the programming that we have or we're planning to do.
And I just love the idea of solar powered lights. That why isn't that just everywhere in this nation?
Well, because it's not profitable. I guess if we decided to do our own lighting, the lighting companies wouldn't make the money. But these are off-grid lights, so they won't cost the residents anything. And they're fully contained. So that means the battery pack, the panel, everything is within the bulb structure itself. So we don't have to mount separately on roofs or on the side of houses or anything like that. So, and right now, they're a little costly. But we can also do the same thing with street lights. I know there are a lot of cities that have gone to solar-powered street lights. Some are on-grid and some are off-grid systems, but they are available. It's just we're behind.
Yeah.
They keep that news from us, too, don't they?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you're putting some brain power, the human resources of the community to work already, solving some of the problems that the community faces. Mm.
Truly, we are made in Detroit, and that means that when it gets tough, the tough have to figure out how to get out of this. We aren't waiting for the Black Hawk helicopters to land and bring us a solution. We have the solution. Right now, we may not have the resources to implement those solutions. So we need assistance with those kinds of things, or simply motivation sometimes. But we do have the answers. Black Hawk doesn't have to land for Detroit to go forward, and we are going forward.
That's a wonderful logo. We're talking not just about logistics in the community, solving actual, physical problems, but we're also talking about the emotional, the spiritual well-being of a community that, does not want to become dependent upon some outside source of assistance.
That's right. And I think it is a lot of emotional, spiritual need to help with the community, because a lot of folks have lost hope and they have left Detroit. Or people have told me that they think their only hope is to see Detroit in their rearview mirror. So we are out often having to just say, we can do this. Get up. Let's try one more time. Let's just hit that thing until it goes in. Even if it breaks off when it goes in, it will be in. We have a solution in Detroit, and we're just waiting to get those implementations in. I mean, organizations are coming together, not just my group, but you can look all over Detroit and see creative things that people have never done before, to see newness and freshness. And we've got the ideas. We've got a lot of young people involved, too. And we are seeing a lot of gentrification, which is something we push back on. We want gentrification without displacement. But we are bringing in new ideas, and things are happening in Detroit.
So this is Adrienne Lobby again. I have a question for you all, now that we've sort of all gotten introduced. The country, I mean, Detroit is just one little place that's in trouble. I'd say the whole country is in trouble.
Yes.
So one of the things that I think the disability movement and the disability justice movement brings is emotional capacity. So if you're a person, say, with paranoia, you learn, if you're going to have any quality of life at all, how to deal with that paranoia. Now, in my community, paranoia, you don't have to have a mental disability to have paranoia. Same with anger issues. Same with, so I feel like that's something that we bring and could bring to the whole nation. And we're, already in your communities with this capacity. I'd like to talk about us nationally. Like, what do you see we could do in the next 5 years to make this country work better?
Yeah, this is Sam Brannon, and my perspective on it is I'm not that concerned with nationally, because there's not a whole lot we can do to reach out and affect anything nationally. I mean, it takes a lot of people. I think it's a lot of micro movements that are going to make the change for us. In San Marcos, my focus and a lot of the people on the project is what can we do in our hometown to protect what we have today and to move it forward the way we want it to go. And I think that's where the solutions are going to be made in the communities. And then, on a broad scale, we'll begin to see the motion happen at the national level. That's my own perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that you're right that the problems that we're facing in Detroit are soon at a lot of people's doorsteps.
That's right.
And we can't just close ourselves off and say, I'm going to take care of this little piece and it's going to get better tomorrow. I think we looked across it to see what are other people doing. Solar, like you said, everyone should know about solar streetlights and solar yard lights and things like that, but they don't because they've been in their own little box and maybe they didn't have that need. And all of a sudden, one day, you won't have streetlights because the city's turned them off, and then you've got to start scrambling. So it's time to open those lines up and use our resources, use our friendships that we're building in this conference to share ideas, to say, here's what Detroit's doing. And maybe 3 years or 5 years from now, when that's at your doorstep, you'll have those resources. You'll have those contacts and those friends that you can reach across lines to and say, you know what? If it worked in Detroit, by gosh, it's going to work here, too.
I think you're right. It's about building relationships.
Absolutely.
And stronger community.
Absolutely.
And building capacity, as mm-hmm. we've talked about. Reverend Joan, you've been talking about the dependence on Black Hawk, dropping, they call those meals?
Yeah.
Down on that must be horrible. And then, on the other hand, you have local food movements saying, hey, mm-hmm. let's build our capacity here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is about dependence on national or big, large systems that corporate systems of mm-hmm. food, of entertainment. And we are here dismissing the corporate mm-hmm. model and saying we can do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. We can produce. And that brings us to another guest we have here. He's producing culture locally at his radio station. We're very glad to have him here. He'll be a presenter, I'm not sure, today or tomorrow at the conference.
Today.
Today, okay. Uh-huh. Jerome.
DEF CON.
You're out in Seattle.
Actually, I'm a broadcaster with KSVR 91.7 FM, located about an hour and 20 minutes north of Seattle in the town of Mount Vernon,
okay.
And recently known for several different things. We were the subject of some national debate when we had the I-5 bridge collapse, and which has kind of ignited the debate about a lot of the infrastructure and projects and things of such that the government's kind of been neglecting. And also, we're the unfortunate town that had the privilege of our now former mayor that we helped decide to retire, give the key to the city to Mr. Conservative whack job Glenn Beck. Yeah, that was us.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. That was us.
Okay.
We didn't take that laying down, I'll tell you that one.
You're involved in cultural issues as well.
Oh, that's right. I'm a registered member of the Upper Skagit Indian Tribe, but I descend from the Cowichan of Vancouver Island and also the Swinomish Tribe, where I grew up on the Swinomish Indian Reservation. And so I've dealt a lot with cultural issues and youth, especially connecting young people through radio, because we on the coast, up until the 70s, we didn't have a written language. And culturally, our people are storytelling people, and that's the way you learned your history. That's the way you learned your customs. That's the way you learned wisdom from your elders, was through storytelling and through oral tradition. I mean, still to this day, I go sit with my 87-year-old great-grandmother from time to time, and she'll just talk and talk and talk and tell me stories of relatives from, you know, long ago and the history of the region and stuff like that. And but yeah, youth has been my big focus in connecting young people through media and kind of like this new age way of telling those stories and those traditions of just, you know, telling your story on the mic. Rather than necessarily in the longhouse like we used to do long ago.
Oh, that's beautiful. Tell us more. We want to hear some stories.
Well, I've done it with my station and the local tribal groups that I affiliate with through the Upper Skagit Tribe and the Swinomish Tribe. I always tell them for young people that from my program, I have an open door policy. If you guys ever want to come in and do anything, you ever have a project you'd like to let the young people speak about, you'd ever like to just come in and learn, just let me know. We'll make it happen. Giving them that outlet, because, you know, it's unfortunate because on the Indian reservation where I'm from, like a lot of reservations around the country, unfortunately, are dealing with a lot of socioeconomic issues with kind of some of the cultural disconnects with the rest of America, because it really is a culture difference. Like it's a different world. It's a different place. I mean, the customs are different. The culture of the people are different. And that can be kind of scary at times for people to open up to the rest of society. And so, you know, the thing we try and kind of really foster is bridging that gap for youth and young people to step outside the box and let their voices that, you know, they hear that may they feel marginalized, you know, sharing their story with the world. Like, I mean, a kid who is able to get in the studio and, you know, talk about a topic that's important to them and broadcast that out to the world, you know, a lot of times that helps them open up to the idea that, you know, hey, wow, maybe I shouldn't feel so marginalized. You know, my voice is important. You know, people are listening to what I have to say. And, you know, kids and youth tend to explore that aspect a little more from the res when you give them that outlet, you know, to be able to do so.
Yeah. And does your, you mentioned the elders telling stories. Do you have the other side of things as well? The elders getting on the radio and sharing stories, is that something they're comfortable with?
Well, sometimes, yeah. My format is really, I have like a hip hop kind of music and slash public affairs show. And, you know, sometimes that does happen. But a lot of times I have a lot of side projects going on. Like, for instance, I'm working on I'm starting off on a project that I'm starting with my own great-grandmother where I'm going to take a recorder and I'm going to go out to her house for a day and just let her talk and let her tell whatever she wants to say. You know, the stories. I told her she can tell whatever she wants to tell because she said, you know, son, She goes, I'd like to tell my stories. She said, because I'm getting old and my memory's starting to disappear, and I think that's an important thing to do. And I thought about how I could help that. And I said, you know, Grandma, let me get a recorder. And I said, I'll come out to your house for a day and let you say whatever you want. And she said, well, what do I say? I said, you know, we can talk about anything. You can tell history. I said, we can even record your recipe for pickled beets if you like, Grandma. Like, you know, whatever. Because that's history, you know, right there. Because when it comes to people like my grandmother, my great-grandmother, they grew up in a much different time than I did. And on the Indian reservation, a lot of times you had to just make do with what you had. And a lot of times with it's interesting because when they cook, and with their recipes even, it really showcases that. Like, I mean, there's a lot of times where some of the most ridiculously simple ingredients or something, they can whip together and make, like, the most amazing thing you've ever tasted. And that's part of that history, you know. That's part of that past because, you know, that's how they had to survive in their time with, you know, whatever they had on hand, you know. I mean,
It's also, as we were talking about, capacity building, you know, for people to get that information of how they can do for themselves instead of being dependent on prefabricated food. And
right.
Yeah. Well, we are drawing to the end of the show. Is there anything that hasn't been there's a lot that hasn't been said. Anyone burning to say something more about their experience with community radio?
Yeah, I'm just so happy that this grassroots radio conference is taking place. We were informed about it a while back, and thankfully Ursula reached out and jogged our memory on it, and we got here. And I've never, you know, I was just amazed by the hospitality that you guys put on for us and how easy you make it for us to be here. So I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of San Marcos, Texas, to the grassroots radio conference.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Well, Ursula has been working very, very hard, and our team has been working very, very hard. So we're glad that that's been your experience, and we hope that continues, certainly.
Well, just looking at last night, I mean, that was my first experience with grassroots, but we had a really good time last night, and we met some folks, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of days with you, and certainly if you're in Detroit, our first fundraiser is in September. We're going to be doing a spaghetti dinner, so stop on in and get spaghetti anywhere you are in the country. Come on to Detroit and see us in September.
Okay. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. It's been a special grassroots radio edition with many guests of ours from around the country. We spoke in order with Adrian Lobby of KPFA in Berkeley. That's a very longstanding community radio station, among the first. Bear, she goes by one name, Bear, from the Redwood Country, K-Mud, and she was talking about the emergency preparedness that community radio allows them. Marika Partridge from Washington, D.C. spoke with us about some of the differences between community radio and public radio, which she was involved in as the editor, producer,
director,
something of All Things Considered, one of the more well-known shows. And then we spoke with Sam Brannan of San Marcos, Texas, Reverend Joan Ross of Detroit, and Jerome DEFCON of
DJ DEFCON Edge.
Okay.
That's my DJ name.
DJ DEFCON of I keep forgetting the name of that town.
Mount Vernon.
Washington.
But KSVR 91.7 FM.
Okay. And geez, we can have links to all of those radio stations on our website, and you can check out some of their streaming or podcasts. And see, hear some of these folks in action. KHOI is a community radio station. You are welcome to come in the door and join us, our production team. Becca Brown has been on the engineering dial here. She's our engineer for the show. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. Ursula has run off to do other things because she's got. We're preparing for our opening plenary section with Jonathan Buffalo of the Meskwaki tribe, and we have something coming up also that the public might want to enjoy on tomorrow, Saturday 11, David Barsamian, historian and public commenter, will be presenting some of the perspectives that you can't get on corporate radio or even public radio these days. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this morning, and we hope to see you around this weekend as we continue the Grassroots Radio Conference and the celebration of community radio. Thanks for listening.